grab a beverage, settle in. When you're ready, we'll begin. Joe and Pat and Michael, too, are gonna talk comic books with you.
Welcome to the Casual Comics Cast, where a couple of comic rookies, Michael and Pat, try to comprehend the world of comic books and comic-related pop culture with the help of Joe, who's just a casual comics guy.
Loved it. All right, well, at least we are going to talk about something we did like. So with that, let's kick it off. Welcome back to the Casual Comics Cast, everybody.
Hey, everybody.
Hello.
So today we've got the new regular crew, which seems to be me, Michael, and Jeff. Say hi, party people.
Hey, hi.
Hello.
And this week we are going to pick back up because there's an immense amount of DC comics coming out, and we all kind of liked reading the DC Future State books we covered last time. So we got some more Future State books, as well as The Wrong Earth Night and Day from Ahoy Comics. What's new with you guys this week in the world of comic books? Anything?
No.
Besides the comics we read?
No.
I've been catching up on Doom Patrol and Titans on HBO Max and
nice.
Loving it.
Which one's better?
It's apples and oranges. Apples and oranges. Titans
oranges,
is...
Oranges are much better.
Oh, I totally disagree.
Those little ones that you get in a
bag.
Oh,
no. The cuties, no way.
Yeah, no. I love those. No, Titans is... Titans is... Did you watch the old Titans cartoons? Well, that's great. Imagine if Quentin Tarantino produced it.
Whoa.
That's nice. What Titans is like.
I think we had a previous podcast where we covered Titans in general, like multiple incarnations of the Teen Titans.
We did.
We did one episode of Doom Patrol. Have you watched any more Doom Patrol or Titans, Michael?
I watched a bunch of the Doom Patrol. I ended up buying season one on Amazon. But I think I was letting it play in the background while I was doing other things, and I kind of got distracted, and I need to go back and give it, you know, my attention and decide if I like it.
Yeah.
So, Jeff, how far are you in the Titan?
I am into season two.
Okay. Doom Patrol?
Doom Patrol still on season one because I'm watching those with my wife. And we watch one every other day or so.
I think that's a good discipline. I end up like binge watching things, and that's why I end up getting distracted. And then, you know, I feel like it's too much all at once. You don't sit and think about it. So I think it's good to do it one at a time.
Yeah.
Go slow.
Yeah. And Doom Patrol is so much fun.
I know.
Yeah. You know, I loved the first episode. It was what prompted me to buy the whole season. And I thought the cast of characters was really good. So I think I need to go back and redo it.
I think that's a good idea. I mean, once you get past the donkey fart, it's pretty good.
Hey, who saw the latest episode of WandaVision?
I did.
Oh.
All right.
I
so
didn't.
Maybe we'll,
they didn't.
Oh, no. No spoilers then. We'll maybe talk a little
me.
WandaVision on the next podcast. We'll make sure we're all caught up.
Well, right, so before we kick off, is there something going on with Black Widow on Disney? I feel like I saw a pop-up about something, but I didn't get it at all. No?
Not yet.
Okay.
The Black Widow movie was supposed to come out, I believe, in April or May of last year, and I don't know that they've got a new date yet. Not
okay.
Yet.
Okay.
But we'll see. I mean, maybe they need to get it out there like they did Wonder Woman and such. I think Marvel's got a different strategy there than maybe Warner Brothers does. Although I think Mulan hit Disney, right? And then they took that route with it.
Yeah, and I think they kind of took it in the shorts, too. I think they lost money doing it that way.
So, Black Widow, it says it's set now to release May 7th of 2021.
All right. Well, I guess I'll rent a movie theater May 7th and be there. Get my own spot. So, let's however you roll. It's fine by
let's
me.
Kick it, yeah.
It's a Sunday evening. Come on, man. I'm going to be, I need some, maybe I need another beer before we kick this off.
You might, I don't know.
We can pause if you want.
Oh, there's no pausing for beer, Jeff. We just power through here.
I think he does. Don't you have a fridge down in the man cave basement?
I don't have a fridge down here. I wish I did.
That's a miss.
I just have a bourbon drawer.
Oh, what more do you need?
We'll talk about alcohol at the end here. We'll see how far we get. So we did pick up three Future State comics this week. We are going to talk about Future State Kara Zor-El, Superwoman, number one, Future State Shazam, number one, and Future State Immortal Wonder Woman number one. And we actually did pre-work this week and talked about what we were going to do. And I don't remember which book we decided to cover first, if at all.
So much for that pre-work.
Are we just going in a random order here?
Whatever order you want to go.
Somebody clue me in. What are we?
You wanted to go in the order that they were supposed to be in time.
In time, yeah. Which I think.
But I can't tell what time mine is.
I think that puts Superwoman first, Shazam second, and Wonder Woman third. That's my decision.
Okay.
The host has spoken. So, Michael, why don't you kick us off with Future State Kara Zor-El Superwoman number one. And here's the cover of mine. I got the variant cover, so I feel special.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I did it on Comixology. So, Future State issue one, Kara, I thought it was Kara, but neither here nor there.
It's my daughter's name. Kara.
Well, I know that it's your daughter's name. It's just in my head it was Kara, so whatever.
All right, let's
Superwoman, Into Graves Part One. And it was written by Marguerite Bennett, and the art was actually by Marguerite Savage. So two Marguerites there. And
sounds like a pizza.
Like, that's a party to me.
Yeah, no, it sounds like a special you get on Thursday night with some tacos.
That's right.
Yeah,
right.
But they're all watered
two
down
for one margaritas. Alrighty. Well, so I didn't know what time frame it was in. It just starts off saying like years from now. So the time's kind of unknown. You have Superwoman who is living on the colony on the moon, or the moon colony. And you see she's there, she's hanging out, and she's gardening, and she's with like the gravestone of her dog Crypto. And it starts out with her really just sort of reminiscing. It's kind of got a little bit of an emo vibe. She's sort of all alone, and she's talking about historically how she came from her planet to Earth because she was supposed to be kind of like the savior of Earth. And when she got there, her infant cousin, who is Superman, and his son had already grown up and sort of taken care of everything that she was intended to take care of. So it really made her obsolete. So she's kind of marooned off on the moon colony, taking care of all the outcasts that live on the moon. It's their haven.
Did you watch any of the Supergirl TV series?
I didn't.
Okay. Well,
so it was important for me to know kind of what her backstory was and what was going on.
So Cliff Notes, and Jeff, keep me honest here, is, you know, Superman came from Krypton, and his parents were like, oh, our planet's going to blow up. Nobody believes us. Dad's like, put my kid on a rocket ship and send him to Earth.
As you do.
You know?
Of course.
Why not? And then they're like, later in the comics, they were going to introduce this character, Supergirl, and her background was cousin of Superman. And they're like, hey, she's a little older and he's a baby. Let's send her to Earth, too, to take care of him. But through the vagaries of interstellar travel, he lands on Earth and grows up and becomes an adult before she even gets here. And so then she's younger than him by the time he's already Superman by the time she gets here, and she's like a teenager and he's an adult.
Which kind of fits if you do the Einstein twins paradox and faster than light travel. So yeah, makes sense.
Like he was in the Corvette and she was in the Toyota Camry.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
does any of that help, by the way, though?
Yeah, no,
are you sure? Because this story really like it drops you in the middle of the crap.
It does.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've talked about that in brevity before. So I kind of knew that was the gist of it. But I mean, the whole first setup of this is really her just like she's like basically like talking herself down from being mad about the fact that she came all the way to Earth and there was nothing for her to do. So like that's the whole setup. The actual storyline kicks off in the middle here with there's like a spaceship that lands on the moon, and this sort of like changing formed creature, which is like sometimes has sort of a human form, sometimes has sort of a dog form. I actually thought that the dog form looked like Valcor from the Neverending Story, kind of. But this spaceship lands, this thing comes out.
Jeff, it's 90s stand-up comedy guy. If the first story was never ending, why was there a never ending story too? Explain that.
Is this thing on? Yeah.
Well, sorry, Michael. We're taking you way off course.
You guys are derailing me, just like Superwoman was apparently derailed on the way to Earth in her stinking spaceship. So anyways, this creature that comes out is like some kind of child, and its name is Lanari. And at first she sort of battles with Superwoman because, you know, Superwoman's like, oh my gosh, you're here. Maybe you're going to attack people on the moon. And then they end up kind of being BFFs for a hot minute. They're like basically just like prancing around the moon. They're like going on jogs together and they're kickboxing. And they're like, basically like Superwoman is becoming a mentor to this creature who is sort of on the lam. She's like escaped from her home planet and she stole this big diamond jewel.
Yeah, that's like in her head. It's weird.
It's like in her head.
but I thought I got the kind of the vibe that it was like it picked up where like she thought she was gonna go to Earth and like be the mentor to Superman, and then like now she's like, oh, here's this young creature that can't control her powers. Maybe I can fill in here. Maybe this is my destiny.
Yeah. She's trying to educate this girl on like, well, because the girl knows her storyline and the girl's like, what? Don't you feel like you got ripped off? And Superwoman's like basically telling her like, so the title of this comic is In Two Graves. And she's talking to her about like, before you seek revenge, dig two graves, you know, like don't live a life where you're bitter and you have hate and like, you just got to go with the flow. I don't know. It's the whole like backstory on it. But, at the end, I mean, Superwoman, this whole setup of Superwoman being like, be the bigger person, like don't let life get you down. She sort of like flips the switch on that. So that's where it goes. And, you know, I don't know what happens in part two, but we're going to see. Maybe Superwoman's going to like unleash.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was interesting. And that's kind of the story is like, apparently she got a lot of wisdom from Krypto, which, I mean, you passed over a pretty big part there, which is like Krypto. That was like devastating. The first page is like she's at Krypto's grave and there's like a tennis ball there. I'm like, oh, Krypto.
Well, like, great story because it's kind of depressing. Like, she just keeps harkening back to her, like, what would her dead dog want her to do? And I don't know, that kind of was a buzzkill.
Krypto really was Superman's pet, though, right, Jeff?
Most of the time back in the Silver Age, yeah.
Mostly, if I remember right,
Supergirl
way back in the day had a pony. Superboy had Krypto and she had a pony.
My super pony.
We talked about this at one point. All right, I'm going to put a pin in that because, Michael, we had talked a long time ago with Pat about let's do a Super Pets episode. So this Krypto is reminding me. We got to do a Super Pets episode. But Krypto basically had all the same powers as Superman. He could fly. He had super strength. He had heat vision. Super cold breath. He's a pretty cool dog.
Super he posed breath. As a reporter.
Yeah, super cold breath. Who wouldn't want that?
I want it. Minty fresh, super cold breath. Yes.
Probably smelled like dog food, though.
Whatever. It's cold. The middle of coronavirus. No one's gonna smell my breath. It's fine.
And also, wasn't there a super cat, Jeff? Or was that Flash had a cat?
No. There was a super cat.
But I also think Flash had a cat, Streaky.
I'm blanking. I think Streaky was the super cat.
Yeah, Streaky.
I think Streaky
belonged
cat.
To the Flash. And you then Ace, so? Ace was the Bat Hound.
Well, yeah, no argument there. Big old German Shepherd with a mask.
Superboy's parents would obviously, the Kents were not going to let him have a, if Superboy had a cat, it would have been a farm cat. It would not have been a domesticated female.
Oh, yeah. A feral cat living in the barn.
Yeah.
You don't need a feral Kryptonian cat.
That'd be bad.
All right. So, Michael, summary judgment on Kara Zor-El Superwoman 1. Yes,
so
no.
It's not for me. I did think, so I will say it was sort of the way it was illustrated, it felt like I was watching a Barbie cartoon. Like it was very pastel and like very beautiful women and like it just, I don't know. The storyline didn't really speak to me much at all. But I also don't know that much about Superwoman. So maybe maybe I just don't get it.
I was a bigger fan of the art than of the story. Cause the art, like, and again, you're reading it on your phone. So what are you going to, but it was very watercolorish type art.
Yeah.
And there were panels.
But not in like an Alex Ross kind of way.
No, very, I don't know. I'm not an art major. Who knows? There's a lot of there's a lot of monochrome to it,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's a very cartoony style of illustration, but the coloring is very subtle watercolor. And there's one or two panels that are very like stained glass-ish type things. And so maybe that's it. It's very monochrome in sort of a stained glass window kind of way.
Yeah, it's got a pastel kind of a feel to it.
Mm-hmm. Right. So kind of drops you in the middle of the action. I felt maybe a little confusing for newer people who don't know as much about Supergirl. But it sounds like once I explain to you more about Supergirl, you're kind of like, maybe that helps a little bit. Who knows?
Maybe. Jeff? I mean, is this like the whole super story of her? Like she just lives on this moon and everyone who lives on the moon hates her and she just helps them all the time because she's benevolent? Like
I have no idea. No clue. You're asking the wrong person. This okay, is a future state. This is a possible future story for her. I don't actually think this is part of real regular DC continuity, but DC continuity is all messed up.
Well, then I hope she unleashes and maybe it will get more exciting for me.
Okay. Yeah. Cause she was very pacifist and she's like, and then this pushes her to the brink and then
she should just let herself go.
Okay. That's not great advice. I don't know.
I don't know.
Michael's like the Sith Lord over here. Give in to your anger.
Give in, Superwoman. Just give in. Let it loose.
All right. Well, Jeff, any thoughts? Any parting words for Kara Zor-El, Superwoman?
Well, my sum total experience with Supergirl, Superwoman is the Helen Slater movie from the 80s.
Yeah.
Which was horrifically awful. And a little bit of the current CW, you know, on the crossover episodes. I've never really actually watched the series. This felt like you said, like it was a Barbie comic. Mm-hmm. It really kind of had that feel, like it was trying to appeal to young girls, very young girls.
Maybe they're trying stuff out. Maybe they're just
Well, of course.
But I'll tell you, the one thing you brought up, the Supergirl, not that I'm not a fan of Helen Slater. But the Superwoman costume in this, I thought the costume redesign was actually really cool and really.
You're wearing a skirt.
It looked matronly to me.
I agree. She's not
Supergirl wearing a mini skirt anymore.
She's wearing a skirt that has a slit in the front and pants underneath the skirt.
Yeah,
it's as if they converted the cape into a skirt.
Well, the Supergirl in the comic books most recently is wearing the shortest miniskirt you've ever seen and a cutoff t-shirt that is bare midriff. And so this seems a little more practical for a Superwoman.
It does.
If we think that they're trying to appeal to young girls.
Which I don't think they are because young girls. I don't think they are either. Board.
Well, it also says ages 13 plus on it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you're way aged out of Barbie by then.
Yeah,
I'm talking visually. Yeah. Visually.
I agree.
Yeah,
but yeah, at the end, she's ready to murder people with her laser eyes. That's not.
Yeah, get it, Superwoman.
I just think visually it shows she's mature. She's not this teenage, immature girl that maybe is that people are used to in the Supergirl comics.
She right, but the artwork looks like they're trying to appeal towards, as you said, Barbie type world.
She sort of looks like Aurora from Sleeping Beauty.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit.
All right, so Michael, you're giving this a pass for the next issue.
I'm in a hard pass, but it had its merits, but it's just not for me. Pass.
Don't worry. I mean, like this show is for people who don't read comic books every day. And what I think you're saying is, hey, if you don't read comic books every day, probably not the one to jump on.
Yeah.
Which then 100%. Takes us to Shazam. And Jeff, you know, I know you were interested in Shazam. And the reason I wanted you to read this is because you're probably one of the bigger Shazam fans I know.
I love Shazam.
So before we get into the comic, sorry, do you want to give Michael a little primer on Shazam? Because she read this book totally cold.
Okay. Shazam came out in the 40s. He was a Superman knockoff who actually ended up surpassing Superman in popularity at the time. He was much more comic booky. It wasn't really a serious superhero back then. Mm. It was more jokey and surrealistic and fun.
Yeah, his sidekick was a talking man, like tiger that stood on two legs.
Yeah, Mr. Tawny.
And his name was Mr. Tawny.
Yeah.
Oh, how nice.
And they make references to him in the Shazam movie, just subtle ones.
By the way, if you haven't seen the Shazam movie, that's definitely worth seeing.
Is it? Yeah. I didn't see it.
Yeah.
Super fun.
Absolutely super fun.
I like the actor, whoever that guy is.
Zachary Levi.
Mm-hmm.
It's cute. Like every other DC movie is so dark and so depressing, and Shazam is just fun.
Good.
Beginning to end.
Very cool.
Not fun. Yeah. DC Future State Shazam.
Not the Shazam that I read, which would, I would say so the opposite.
The one thing Michael might not be tracking is Billy Batson. Who's Billy Batson?
Okay. Billy Batson is an orphan who is pure of heart and was selected by the wizard Shazam to have his powers passed on to before the wizard Shazam dies.
Sorry, Michael, okay. This is the appropriate time for you to open your beverage if that's what you're thinking right now.
Yeah, settle in.
Might need to. Continue, please.
So the wizard Shazam gives him the power to become Captain Marvel. I'm going to say it.
Jeff,
I don't care.
Go there. Well, his name was Captain Marvel, and for
he was the original Captain Marvel, and then DC sued Fawcett Comics because he was obviously a Superman ripoff, and they won. And Shazam went away for a good 20 years until DC bought Fawcett and bought all of those characters, and then decided to bring him back in the early 70s. But in the meantime, Marvel decided that they wanted to have a character named Captain Marvel.
I feel like we talked about this sometime in the past, and I was like, this is all getting very confusing for me.
We talked about it when we talked about Captain Marvel, and that's when I learned we should set aside. Maybe we need to have a segment just for legal issues. So
we can bring on some,
anyway,
some
Billy
familiar
Batson.
Friends.
Billy Batson.
So Billy Batson is this kid who can say a magic word and turn into this great Superman-like superhero who possesses all of the
attributes. Why is his name Shazam?
Because
it stands for?
Yeah, it's an acronym. It's for Solomon, Hercules, Achilles, Zeus, Atlas, and Mercury.
Right.
He has all those.
All the names.
Well, he has all those combined powers. He's got like the wisdom of Solomon, the speed of Mercury. He's got all that. Hercules.
He possesses the powers of the gods.
Okay. All right. That's
and
cool.
And he's essentially a 12-year-old boy.
Who turns into a full-grown man when he says,
But not in the future state.
Not in future state, because as we find out, Billy and
let me go back because you're missing a key point, Michael. Michael, you skipped way ahead.
Okay.
So Billy Batson is a 12-year-old boy, and he says Shazam is his magic word, and he turns into like 28-year-old super dude.
Yeah, and with all the powers of the gods.
With all the powers of the gods, and then he turns back into then like when he's done with all of his crime fighting or whatever he was doing, he turns back into a kid. Who, by the way,
he says Shazam again.
Doesn't he use a crutch? Isn't he like in the comics?
No, that's Freddie Freeman.
Freddie Freeman, got it. Mm-hmm. So, but anyway, he was a newspaper boy, I think. Like, not a newspaper boy who delivers it to your house. The kind that's like, extra, read all about it.
Talking the papers
on
the street.
Can you do that
corner.
Again?
Once is enough.
So it's kind of like the movie Big.
It's exactly like the movie Big, only with superpowers.
Only with superpowers. See, I'm picking up on it. I got it.
All right, so Jeff, hop in then, because that'll make the whole stuff of where they keep calling him Billy and he doesn't want to be called Billy make a lot more sense.
Right. Okay, so we are talking Shazam Future State issue number one, which is The Last Temptation of William Batson. And it's written by Tim Sheridan, penciled by Eduardo Panseca, and, you know, anchors, colorers, letterers, blah, 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 blah. The timeline here is apparently sometime after Future State Teen Titans issue one, from what I've found out online.
Okay.
So it kind of drops you right into the middle of what's going on, as a lot of these Future States do. So Shazam is Shazam. He's not Billy. He's Shazam. And every time somebody calls him Billy, he's like, don't call me Billy. He's kind of perturbed about it.
Mm-hmm.
He's leading up what looks like to me Justice League Detroit.
Could be.
It's a small faction of Justice League people, including the Question and Vixen and some other people whose names. Bunker. I've never heard of Bunker before.
Archie Bunker.
Archie Bunker, right. Jeez, you, huh? Yeah, no. Uh-uh. And
some lady version of the Martian Manhunter.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And Shazam is not the jovial, happy-go-lucky Shazam that he usually is. He's very brooding and he's very And he hasn't changed back into Billy in a long, long, long time.
Yeah, so question. I mean, I think the thing about Shazam is, like, at heart, even though he's like a big dude, and if you watch the movie, it's actually kind of funny. Even though he's like a big dude superhero, he's still got basically the mental state of like a 12 to 14 year old boy who's like amazed that he's a superhero all the time. But he's right. Like, in this comic, he's just like very kind of, like you say, brooding, which is really off brand for him.
Right. It's more like Black Adam than it is Shazam. Black Adam is the earlier version of Shazam, but that didn't work out so well.
Isn't The Rock Black Adam?
Yeah,
he's not yet, but he's going to be.
Yes. Okay.
So, and he hasn't always been that man-child version. That's kind of a recent development, like in the last 20 years or something, that they made him the man-child when he's Shazam. But anyway, he's not. And people are like, what's going on? The question is in particular saying, have you noticed that there's something wrong with Shazam? Something's not right. And I have to go to my notes here. So he's questioning it, and he's talking to all the other Justice Leaguers. It's like, keep your eye on him. Something's weird.
He kind of seemed like a bad guy.
Almost, yeah. He's, like I said, anti-hero, kind of like Black Adam. It's not the Shazam that everybody knows and loves. So they get a call to go to Iron Heights because there's a break-in going on. Iron Heights is this massive metahuman prison, and there's a break-in going on. It turns out Giganta and Manhunter Robot are trying to spring the Creeper because Black Adam wants him for some purpose.
Who's the Creeper?
Joe, I'm going to let you jump in on that one because I really am not familiar with the Creeper other than he looks like a manic Joker type thing.
Yeah, so here's what I would say is I read comics like we talk about on occasion, and what I'm able to infer from the comics I've read is that the Creeper is somebody who looks like the Joker and creeps around a lot, apparently. But again, if you think you're listening to this podcast because you don't read a lot of comic books, there's no information for you here on who the Creeper is.
No.
And I read
I don't know why books. You would want him. There were other meta-humans or meta-things. There's a big gorilla in there that I thought looked like I would want that before I would want this Creeper guy. But I don't know.
Maybe you do, maybe you don't.
Well, Gorilla Grodd.
Depends on what I'm trying to do.
Bad news.
You've watched the Flash TV show, right, Michael?
I watched a little bit of the first season.
Gorilla Grodd.
You don't get Grodd in the first season. You get hints of him.
Okay.
All right, he's a bad guy from the Flash.
Sorry, universe. I derail.
Yeah, so the Creeper looks like a cross between Kraven the Hunter from Marvel Comics and the Joker.
Right.
And
so in a Shazam comic, DC's itching to get sued again by Marvel.
So they're having this. They're trying to spring him, and the JLA shows up, and they fight them off, and. When they're done with the battle, they look over and Creeper is dead as a doornail. So they're like, whoa, what happened? Did you do it? Who did this? How did he die? Looks like he was gutted with a stone knife. Who knows?
Who knows, except the astute readers who saw that Shazam was wearing that exact same stone knife around his neck on the first page of the book.
Shh, don't give it away yet. Then the question has had drones out there taking video of everything, and the video mysteriously all is corrupted.
It was missing,
nobody knows.
Conveniently, it was uncorrupted.
Yes, later on it was. But first, Shazam goes off to Philadelphia to some storefront where he is holding Johnny Thunderbolt prisoner. Why? I don't know. The comic doesn't tell you why. He's just there. And they say to each other, hey, you might, or Shazam says, you know too much about me. One of us is going to have to go. And I don't know what happens from there. Did anybody else pick up on exactly what happened?
I this was like just all over the place for me, to be completely honest.
Yeah.
This book was fairly impenetrable.
Yeah.
It was harder to get into than the Fortress of Solitude.
Exactly. Well, the result is Shazam ends up back at home with having had his rear end handed to him.
He basically tells him, I'm going to let you go so I can murder you later. So you have a fighting chance.
Yeah. But they do fight because he ends up at home in bed with a bloody face and he got the tarnation kicked out.
Yeah, he did.
But then in the next panel, he's back to normal.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
She's got the,
so then back at JLA,
the healing
Detroit.
Power of Wolverine. He's Shwazam.
So is Wolverine one of the gods?
Basically, at this point.
So they let's wrap it up here. They get back to JLA Detroit. Question confronts Shazam, and they find, like you said, they uncorrupt the video, and they see that Shazam murdered the creeper at super speed while nobody was looking. And he confesses to killing somebody else, somebody named Drake. Does that mean anything to anyone?
The rapper from Canada?
No, the rapper, yeah.
Yeah, it was Drake. He killed Drake.
This is not going to go over well.
My kids are going to be very, very upset.
Yeah, they are.
Then we get a flashback where Shazam is in hell.
Yeah,
apropos of nothing, he's just suddenly, years ago, he's in hell, and this character Neron, who apparently is kind of like the devil, turns out he split Billy and Shazam into two separate people.
Yes.
Which is why he's not Billy, and he gets ticked off every time somebody calls him Billy, because he's not Billy anymore. And Billy was left chained to the door of the Rock of Eternity to guard a prisoner that they don't identify, that is apparently so powerful that he has to be guarded by a 12-year-old boy.
I was just going
to
say, like, how the hell is Billy going to do anything about it? One, they made him totally powerless. He's chained, his hands and his legs are chained up in a big letter X.
Oh, yeah.
He can't, and he's a 12-year-old boy. Like, what the heck's he going to do?
If I was reading correctly, it's because his innocence will make sure nobody can get through. So he's like basically... Billy Batson is Billy Batson to demons.
Well, he's 12, I would hope.
Oh,
so.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Sorry. I keep forgetting how old he is.
But like they hang him on the door because he's like garlic to vampires. Like they can't get past him. He's just gonna hang here forever because it's called the Rock of Eternity. And I was not tracking with that at all. That there was some prisoner trapped in the Rock of Eternity. And
yeah.
I don't know, who is it? I don't know. But
it's one of the most powerful things in the world. And Shazam has never said the magic word again because when he says that, his power goes back to the Rock of Eternity and waits until Billy calls on him again. But if he says Shazam, his power will go back to this thing they're holding prisoner and take that power and use it to escape and whatever.
Seems like not a great place to hold this captive.
Well, it's better than Iron Heights because Giganta can break into that easily.
And in most cases, I would say, what's the alternative? You know, how else are you going to keep this thing contained? And but I'm kind of thinking... maybe Shazam should just kill it because that's what he does now.
He doesn't care.
He just wrecks dudes' faces.
He doesn't have Billy in there going, hey, come on, maybe we shouldn't do that anymore. So, no, just kill him. Who cares?
All right. So, Jeff, you were the Shazam fan. And I was curious as we were going through these books. It's like sometimes I'm like, who are these books written for? And you're a Shazam fan.
I was weaned on Golden Age Shazam. So okay. I'm a Golden Age Shazam fan.
Okay, but like, so...
So this book is not for me, that's for sure.
Michael, you weren't a Shazam fan.
I'm still not a Shazam fan. But what you described to me, he sounds like someone who would be interesting to me. But this wasn't a comic that got me to that point of fandom. Sorry.
No, I think this comic would actively turn people away from being a fan of Shazam in any way. And I was
worried. He was ripped. I did like that, but outside of him being ripped, it was just nothing for me.
All right, so watch the Shazam movie because you'll enjoy it a lot more. But I think, I think you're both being a little kind in that, like, these books, I think, are hard pass, right? Hard pass. I mean, I'm like, who is this book for? This book is for the probably tiny subsection of people who are always like, you know what I wish? I wish there was a super murder Shazam. I don't know how many people that is, but if you're out there and you're listening, this is your book.
Yes, this is for you.
Yeah, it's probably for the people who read voraciously and follow all the storylines and are like, hey, this is really cool. Cause look what they're doing with Shazam right now.
Well, I'll tell you what, I listened to another podcast by some friends of mine in Omaha, Nebraska called the Two-Headed Nerd Podcast. They are super voracious readers. They didn't care for it either. They're like, why would anybody want to do this? Shazam? So bad.
sell some books, I suppose.
I'm not worried that DC is going to pull their sponsorship of us if they get, if we give them a bad review at this point.
They're sponsoring us? Nice.
They are. I get their books for only $5.99 each.
What a bargain.
It's stealing.
All right, so our last book on Future State, and I was so hopeful when we went into this week with Future State because how well it went last week. We all liked Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm.
We all liked the other ones.
Batman
was
the next great. Batman.
Yeah,
and then what was the other one we read?
Flash was okay.
I don't think any of us were in love with
that. And it was kind of interesting because this Shazam was a little bit like oh, if you like Flash, maybe you'll like Flash being a murderer. That's like, oh, if you like Shazam, it seems to be a trend right now.
But we had Flash being a murderer in that issue.
Yeah.
He hit a guy for crying out loud.
I know. Maybe that's the future state. So I'm not going to spend a ton of time on the Immortal Wonder Woman unless you all want to. This is the book I was most hopeful for because my favorite book last week was Wonder Woman, and I love what they're doing with Wonder Woman there. And speaking of, you know, Michael, you talking about trying to orient to when did this book take place, this one starts off with impossibly long ago in the distant future. I'm like, all right, you've lost me with your first orientation moment. I say this as somebody who has written some really bad stuff. I would not be proud of having written that, even compared to other stuff I've written that is not good. So this is Wonder Woman in Future State, the Immortal Wonder Woman. Becky Cloonan, Michael Conrad, writers. Jen Bartel, the artist. And there's two stories in this book. There's one of the future Wonder Woman that these comics were just impenetrable for people who are casual fans. People are not going to get it. Like, I'm sure, Michael, you had no idea who Big Barda was or why she was important or who any of these people were. And I get it. I mean, like, when I was growing up, one of the things I liked, and I've heard criticisms of DC's Future State, of it just drops you into the middle of the action. That's how I was used to reading comic books when I was growing up. You just got dropped into the middle, but the writer took some time to orient you. Even Michael, when we read Secret Wars, very, very complicated book. Every time, and even if it was corny, it's like
repetition.
Here's Colossus's thought bubble of, oh, I remember when this happened, and therefore I'm going to do that now. Like right, for people who were not like into it, even. My favorite part of Secret Wars, Jeff, is the big spread where they introduce each other. And like,
oh, yeah. Yeah. We did that one, didn't we?
You did a magnificent performance of that.
It was wonderful.
But like these books, so I'm used to being a little disjointed, but Darkseid is not a character that people are super familiar with. Darkseid is basically DC's version of Thanos. So super powerful and exists because he wants to kill all life in the universe. And somehow it's in the far, far future or the distant past, one of the two, which has firmly been established.
Yeah, but whatever.
But as I understand DC's Future State, this must happen about 4,500 years in the future because I did read the Swamp Thing was set like the farthest away, 4,500 years in the future. And this is after Swamp Thing is now the only green thing left on planet Earth trying to keep it alive. Diana and the Amazons are still around. Don't know how many other people are still around. And it's sort of like this whole issue is a buildup of a collision course between Darkseid being like, well, now that everything's almost dead, it might be time for me to finally take over Earth. And Diana and the Amazons debating whether they're going to stay and try and defend Earth or just take off and go somewhere else. And they're like, well, we got to stay here because the green of the Earth is important. And like, motivations were hard to come by. Darkseid has never been a character that I liked. Old paunchy Superman shows up. The way he's drawn was a little bit like...
Okay, it was weird. I wrote that I thought he looked really weird in the face, and he doesn't have his normal like underpants on, so he's just like a blue body. It just looked weird.
Yeah, he's got a different costume. Wonder Woman... I get it. Wonder Woman looks like she hasn't aged today. Superman's got like a gray beard now, and he's going to fight Darkseid. But the whole issue is a giant just build-up to apparently Wonder Woman and Superman are going to have to fight Darkseid again in the future or the past. Probably the future. I would assume the future. Wonder Woman appears to have a
Like, and then at the end, I don't know, Swamp Thing's like, oh, here's all my power, I guess. I'm going to die now. It reminded me of the Seinfeld. All right, Gammy's dead now. Don't call anymore. Goodbye, Billy. I mean, like, it totally lacked for me depth and emotion, and even the art was it wasn't, I don't know. I don't want to say I hated this book, but not something I cared for. I was actually more interested in the backup story, which was Nubia. Future State Nubia was not a character I was super familiar with. Apparently Diana's half sister, maybe. Do you recall reading it? It seems like, you know, we go back to Zeus was a player the whole time and was messing around, and Nubia winds up being Diana's half sister or something like that. It was marginally more interesting because it had a plot propelling it forward. That there's these shards that somebody's trying to collect, and if they get one more, they'll have some ultimate kind of power, more of a straight ahead. And I did enjoy Nubia with her Aunt Nancy, the family parts. So I like that. It was okay. I'm more interested in the Nubia stuff than in the Immortal Wonder Woman stuff 4,500 years in the future. But again, probably won't pick up the second book. What do you guys think?
Well, I have no opinion because I apparently didn't get the memo and I read the wrong book.
No, I read the wrong book too. I think Joe actually is the one that read the wrong book because Joe gave us the assignment and you and I think read the same thing.
What did you read? Superman, Wonder Woman?
Superman, Wonder Woman. I even sent you a screenshot of it and was like, is this the one I'm supposed to read? And you were like, yeah. Okay. So I was like, right. I don't know what Joe's talking about, right. But I'm just going to.
No wonder you're both on your phone.
Oh, yeah. Phone. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah.
I was texting you guys and saying, I think I might not have read the right comic book here. Because right. I read something about like some horse gods that are like the sun and the moon. And Superman had, again, did me saying that Superman didn't wear his normal red underpants, is that not how it was illustrated in this other one that you read?
Yeah, he was not wearing red underpants in this one either.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. So at least we got away from that. They got the same. Okay.
Yeah, right. The red underpants came from back in the day when circus strongmen wore stuff on the outside, and that was kind of what they were going for in the early days. Yeah. And today the aesthetic is like, no, ditch them.
Well, I think
bring them back. I felt weird about it. I want the red underpants back.
Okay. All right. No, we can talk about Superman, Wonder Woman too, if you'd like. I wouldn't like.
I didn't like it.
So Superman, Wonder Woman. Superman is his son, though. That's whatever. It's like Greek mythology. I actually thought Superman, Wonder Woman is better than any of these books we read this week.
Oh, really? It was better than Shazam, and it was better than the Superwoman. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree with that, but it wasn't particularly great.
All right. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say I'm going with Shazam over either of the other two.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I guess what we're saying basically this week for the Future State comics is a giant skip it, and maybe we'll get back into the next Batman, like, because Batman was pretty good.
Or the Wonder Woman. Because they're both, I mean, they're just two episodes, right? Or two issues, so it's not like a big endeavor to finish.
Everything we read, we're thinking we would continue reading next Batman and Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman, yeah.
Yeah, because Batman, whatever iteration you do of Batman, it works. And it's...
Oops, sorry about that. Small technical glitch, but we're coming back right about now.
All right. Sorry, I had a technical issue. For some reason, my screensaver turned on. It stopped recording for 10 seconds there.
I thought, way to go, Jeff. Killed the momentum.
No, you. We've got a sounder from you, though, where you're like, technical issues. We'll just insert that there. Technical issues occurred, but for like 10 seconds. But maybe that was meant to be, because this week of Future State was not fantastic in any way. But we did read one more comic this week, as we're coming up on Time, The Wrong Earth, Night and Day from Ahoy Comics, written by Tom Payer and illustrated by Jamal Igle. I don't know how to pronounce his name, so I'm sorry if you're listening. You're probably not, but if you would like to send me an email with the correct pronunciation, we will make sure we'll cover it next time. Because Wrong Earth is a book, Jeff, that you and I read and loved, right?
Yeah.
There was six issues from Ahoy Comics before?
Oh, yeah. Okay, sure. Yes.
Okay.
Just, I have no idea.
Sounds right.
It's improv.
It was a graphic novel, so I don't remember.
You got to yes and it. You got to yes and it.
See, I was never an improv guy.
Wrong Earth, the original premise, and Michael, you didn't read these, was Dragonfly, the quote-unquote, the Dragonfly, and Dragonfly Man came from two different universes. Just like when we read these DC comics, there's all kinds of different universes where different stuff goes on. One is based off of the very campy Batman TV series from the 1960s starring Adam West, and one is based off of kind of the really current dark version of Batman that you see in movies. Super billionaire technology guy, all this stuff. And I don't think you know much about the 1960s Batman, which Jeff and I just totally grew up with. But like, absolutely. He had a utility belt with awesome stuff on it. And the best was the Bat Shark Repellent?
Bat Shark Repellent.
There's a shark attacking him, and he happened to have a little bottle on his utility belt that said Bat Shark Repellent. And he sprayed it on the shark, and the shark went away.
He literally has a 6-foot rubber shark attached to his leg that's just kind of flopping around. It's hilarious.
But it's very 60s, very kid-friendly, like goofy scenarios versus what's happening in Batman today, where it's dead serious and murder and
absolutely craziness. Humorless.
And so these two characters who are analogs of Batman, the Dragonfly and Dragonfly Man, switch universes. And so the jokey, goofy kind of Batman is in the dark universe and vice versa. And so that's where this is like, if you would think Wrong Earth was the first season of a TV show, Wrong Earth Night and Day is the second season of the TV
show. Gotcha. Got it.
So you haven't read any of them before, Michael. Were you able, based on what I just said, were you able to pick up most of that from what you read in the book?
I was able to tell there were two different Earths and that there was like a shift, because it really helped that they had the Stinger. Is that what his name is?
Yeah. He's the version of Robin.
So really you picked it up sort of in their interaction a lot, because Stinger was studied to the like home planet that they were supposed to be on. Right. So their interaction, you could tell that they were in the wrong place, right? The way they were handling and approaching solving crime or doing things was in contrast. So yeah, I was able to get there.
Stinger 2 is from the I don't know, the dark universe, which in season 1, quote unquote, of Wrong Earth, you find out the original Stinger got killed by the bad guy, like the really bad guy, which happened in the DC comics. Robin got killed, and there's just another Robin. Yeah. They all just lining up to get
spendable,
knock him down. Most of them come back, but not always. This is season 2 now, and Jeff, you read the first, and you were a fan, right?
A year ago. Loved it. Okay. I really, really enjoyed it, because it doesn't take itself terribly seriously.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it does, but it doesn't, because you've got the juxtaposition of Christian Bale and Adam West. And when you're talking to Adam West, it's all goofy and fun and happy and whatever. And you've got this dour, awful human being dropped into the middle of that. On the flip side, when you put Adam West in the other world, it's really kind of tragic and not fun at all.
But they found a way to make their own way in each other's universes. And then so this kicks off. I don't want to give away the whole plot. We don't have to rehash it all, because I would say if any of that sounds appealing to you at all, just get this book, because it is pretty great. I liked it a lot. It sort of redeemed this whole DC future state. Like, this was a future, quote unquote, version of a DC comic that I would like to see DC publish. I wish DC had published this with the actual Batmans.
Yeah, it would have been fantastic.
Right. But leave it to Ahoy Comics to pick up this. The thing that made me the happiest, having read the first series.
I know where you're going.
What is it? I need to know now.
Is Lady Dragonfly Man.
I wrote that down too. I was like, this is ridiculous. She's Lady Dragonfly Man.
I love it. It's so 60s comics and 70s comics. You just take a guy character and make and yes, I get it. There's Batman and Batgirl and Superman and Supergirl. There was literally a villain in Marvel Comics named Stiltman, and then somebody else took over and she was Lady Stiltman.
Oh my gosh.
So Lady Dragonfly Man just made me so happy in the moment.
I also did really like the ultra super sticky dragonfly paper as a repellent to bullets.
Mm-hmm. That's very 1960s Batman.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And even the comics at that time, it was just like, whatever it was, he had a ridiculous solution for it. And if you go back and watch the TV show, Michael, there were like, you think the trap in this comic book where he's about to be boiled in a giant kettle because he's placed in a tea bag? No, they were even dumber back then.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and the intro to this, like the mobsters, they're in like Pilgrimville or whatever. And the mobsters are what the crime they've committed is they've stolen the deeds to all of the churches in the area so that they now control the collection plates of all of these massive churches. And that's like the crime that is being committed. I'm like, because I didn't know what to expect going into this. So I was like, what is going on here?
I think, Jeff, we are due for a sit down, watch, and review of the Batman movie with Adam West in it.
You know what? Name your time and place. I will be there. I will absolutely be. It's right over here. It's right over here on my shelf. I got it right there. I'm ready to go.
We can find a way in this pandemic to stream it online and share it. I don't want to have to tap into your memory banks, but since it's right on your shelf or on your shelf there, Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
Now this bizarre plot to steal all the collection plates and then boil them in a giant kettle. What's the craziest supervillain plot and that you remember and the craziest trap Batman was placed in? Because every TV series was a two-part episode and Batman would be placed in a super, or Robin, or both, would be placed in a super complicated trap, and then you would have to wait till next week, same bat time, same bat channel, to find out how they escaped. What was the craziest thing you remember?
The original series would air two times a week. Oh. It would, like, on a Tuesday night and then on a Wednesday night.
Okay, so tomorrow. So
it was just a cliffhanger for a day, and then you'd find out what happened. So, probably, they were all so weird and so crazy. There was an episode of the original Batman where at the same time that Batman was on TV, there was also a Green Hornet television series, which was famous for casting a young pre-fame Bruce Lee as Kato. And they were produced by the same company, so they did a crossover episode. Green Hornet and Kato showed up in Gotham City, and they were fighting a villain that may or may not have come from the comics, but he wasn't your standard villain. He was Colonel Gum, and he was played by an actor named Roger C. Carmel, who is best known as playing Harry Mudd on the original Star Trek TV show.
The guy, everything about his name is about confectionaries and candy. His name was Robert Carmel, and he played Colonel Gum. Come on.
But it wasn't about candy. It was about glue. He was into stamps and glue and all things of that nature. So he has this gigantic, and I mean fills a room, gigantic stamp perforating machine. And he put Green Hornet and Kato through it. Then he put Batman and Robin through it. And he turned them into giant wall-size postage stamps. how crazy can you get? That was probably the weirdest, most out there.
But they didn't die. How did they not die?
Of course they didn't die. Well, of course they didn't die.
Do I have to tune in next? Maybe people should tune in to the next podcast to find out how to die.
Same bad time. Same bad channel. Yeah. He figured it out.
He figured it out. He got out of the damp.
He always does. He's Batman.
So that's The Wrong Earth, Night and Day. Love that book. And the one thing I do like about Ahoy Comics is the prose. Some of the short stories they published. Did you either one of you read the short stories?
No. I didn't see them.
Oh, were they not in the digital version, Michael? Were they?
They probably were, but I read this not too long ago, so I got through what I was supposed to read. And
I would encourage you. Ahoy Comics does also do a great job for artists or for people who write short stories. People can actually submit them online, but there's a really good, by short story, I mean under a page,
Oh, look at that. There it is.
And the one that's pretty good is called A Message from Death Punch Boy by James Finn Garner. Sort of like an open newsletter from Death Punch Boy.
Yeah, they're there. I just totally missed them. I have to go back and read these.
That's
one is like your brain on the pandemic or something like that.
Right. So those are usually, you know, I didn't used to read them either because I was like, oh, it's a comic. And now there's just a bunch of, but they're pretty good. And Ahoy Comics does this in every one of their titles. They publish little short stories. And they're always worth reading because they're always by, you know, great creators. So I think if we had a theme for this week, it's skip the DC. And if you're into DC stuff, read Wrong Earth Night and Day instead.
Please do. It's so much fun.
All right. And they're not paying us to say that.
I know. but I want people to have fun reading comics. And boy, you have a lot of fun reading these.
Yes. All right. So any parting thoughts, comics crew?
I don't think so.
No, this is a hell of a way to wrap up a podcast, but it was a bit of a downer week.
It was. I mean, comics. You know, but that's okay because there are weeks when, you know, we have rave reviews. So I think if everything was equally good, you know, that wouldn't work either. So,
yeah. And we had the rave review on The Wrong Earth.
Yeah. Right.
So yeah. What we're saying is Titans good. The TV series, Jeff, right? You were watching.
Yeah, that? like I said, it's Titans as if Quentin Tarantino produced it. So Titans, beware.
Good. Doom Patrol on TV. Good. Michael, you're saying The Stand.
The Stand.
Yes.
And The Outsider. Good. So good.
And I'm watching now Watchmen. Finally, I was watching that before the pandemic and I was watching it mostly on planes while I was flying around for business. And then once I stopped traveling for business, I stopped watching Watchmen and now I'm picking it back up. So good. Did you finish Watchmen, Michael?
Mm-mm. No, I didn't finish it.
Are you talking the HBO series?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The episodes I watched were very good though. I gotta continue.
For people who have not seen it yet, be prepared. A lot of Wang. That show.
Well, yeah.
No red underpants. Lots of Wang.
No underpants at all.
Got it.
Yeah.
Duly noted.
And I'm always a purist about things. I love the original Watchmen. I've read it. I don't even know how many times. And I'm thinking, oh, they're going to do a sequel and it's going to be awful. And it was wonderful. I really loved it.
Good.
I liked it. So we'll end on a high note. Those are some excellent things to check out. We will tune back in with some more of the DC Future State stuff we want to read. We'll definitely keep up with Wrong Earth. We'll figure out what we want to read next time, people. But stay tuned with WandaVision, too, because I'm loving it so far. Michael, you're a bit behind, so we don't want to spoil it, but we'll talk about it next time.
Sounds like a plan.
All right. Cheers, everybody.
All righty.
And cheers, everyone. If you've got a comic you'd like to hear us talk about, please let us know on Twitter, at Casual Comics Guy, at our blog, CasualComicsGuy.com, or on our Facebook page, Casual Comics Cast. So until next time, stay safe and stay frosty, people.